Fish and pull for Uncle Ray.
Christmas shopping at the general store.
And a Raggedy Ann for Bessie May.
Christmas shopping at the general store. There's yarn and sweets and sundries. French talcum for your face. Newfangled woolen undies. Pink parasols and fancy lace. It's filled with dandy gifts galore. Old John will greet you at the door. Come join your neighbors rich and poor. Christmas shopping at the general store.
Well, you can take big city shopping trips up highfalutin streets. Go traipsing around from shop to shop, worn out and lost, about to drop, with blisters on your feet.
But look, I've never seen such shiny marbles.
Christmas shopping at the general store.
This toy canary really warbles.
Christmas shopping at the general store. That little wooden wagon, just right for young cowhands. And gosh, that model aeroplane, they say it flies on rubber bands. We could wind her up a bit and watch it soar. Christmas shopping at the general store. It's filled with dandy gifts galore. Old John will greet you at the door. Come join your neighbors rich and poor. Christmas shopping at the general store.
Well, you can keep your giant catalogs, Montgomery Ward and Sears. Go squinting through that fat index, mail away or paper checks, and wait what seems like years.
Now they've got colored thread for the gifts I'm sewing.
Christmas shopping at the general store.
These boots will fit Billy if he keeps on growing.
Christmas shopping at the general store.
What to get my sweetheart? Old John took me aside. Between you and me, I think she loves them dainty, lacy pair of gloves. She was mooning at them for an hour or more.
Christmas shopping at the general store. It's filled with dandy gifts galore. Old John will greet you at the door. Come join your neighbors, rich and poor. Christmas shopping at the general store. Christmas shopping at the general store.
Okay, we're going to try again, Susan. You are there. Hello, Susan.
Hi, I'm here. Is this okay?
It is. Did you change anything on your end?
I did. It's funny. I took it too literally when you asked me if I had the radio on. I was listening to the program on my laptop.
Well, radio is a varied and sundry notion. So, hello, Susan.
Hi, Phil. It's nice to see you.
It is nice to see you. It's nice to hear you properly and not hear myself twice. I'm going to introduce you briefly. What did I say your name was? You're Cimarron Sue. I had you confused with somebody else.
Embarrassing. Gosh, are they going to be calling in?
I think that you probably have quite a following, and they're probably going to be knocking on the window and the wall here. Nevada Slim and Cimarron Sue, they are the featured artists in this hour of Cass and Our Laps. And I'm not going to have Nevada Slim here, unfortunately, but we do have Sue.
Right.
And who is she? Who are they? Nominated for 6 different awards in 2008 by the Western Music Association, Nevada Slim and Cimarron Sue, minstrels of the Old West, deliver a spirited interpretation of traditional Western music, honoring working cowboys and cowgirls, as well as those who rode the ranges in the movies. It is Slim and Sue's mission and their first love to bring the songs and stories of the American West to audiences across the West and beyond. They draw from a large repertoire of songs and cowboy poetry to provide glimpses of the people who built the American West. Better yet, they're the real thing. And that is Cimarron Sue and Nevada Slim. Let's have a contrast here between Western music, the music that you performed and may still perform. I don't know if you do. And country and Western music, you know, the commercial stuff that one can hear on, did you say you don't have a radio, on the radio that you might or might not have?
I do have a radio. I don't have a television. The difference between cowboy and Western music and country and Western music is the cowboy music tends to be more about the land, the work, the West, whereas country and Western tends to be more about divorces, your dog dying, and losing your pickup truck.
I was going to say, you got to get the truck in there somehow.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, we our songs don't have a lot of trucks in them. So if people were tuning in hoping to hear some really fine music about trucks, I'm sorry, they're not going to hear it tonight.
So you don't truck in trucks?
Nope, no truck in trucks.
Okay, so we did play, I was going to begin with a song after introducing you, and we played the song and then we introduced you, so we're a little bit out of order here, but out of order is not unusual, at least on this show. So in my salad days, which was Tossed Salad, the show I was involved with before, I tried to get you and Nevada on with me, and I know that you came this way, but I never succeeded in doing that, and it was and is a regret, because I like to have live music on the show. But I never could manage to make it happen. And sadly, Nevada died in 2019.
2018, actually. Ooh. It's been just over 3 years. It was 3 years on the 23rd this week.
So Bruce Matley was Nevada Slim. And Cimarron Sue, I guess I gave it away, is Susan Matley. And she's still alive, and she is right here with me. How did the two of you meet, and how quickly did you realize you had a future as performing artists?
Well, we met in 1999. Bruce had a trio then called the Nevada Slim Trio. So he played guitar and did lead vocals. And he had a fiddler, Bill Ham. Bill's stage name was Fiddlebone Ham. And then a lady bass player, Bela Dworsky, who I think still lives in the area. And she's a lifelong musician, so I'm sure she's playing bass for someone somewhere. Anyway, Bela decided that the trio wasn't what she needed to be doing then, so he was looking for another bass player. And through one of Port Townsend's wonderful arts and restaurants and whatever networks, he eventually heard about me and gave me an audition. So my first show with him was down at the Upstage in December 1999.
And I was going to ask which came first, the altar or the stage, but clearly it was the stage.
Oh, yes, yes. The altar was, 6 years in the future. Although we did work together quite a bit, especially from 2002 forward when we formed into a duo. And we were a couple by then, but we, I'll just say that we'd both been married enough times to be cautious about getting married again. So yeah, that was in 2006 at the Jefferson County Courthouse at high noon on February 13th.
And who officiated?
Mark Huth.
Ah, I thought it might have been your father, who I believe was a judge, was he not?
He was, but Dad passed away in 1994.
That would have been hard for him to do then.
It would have been very hard to do that, but Mom was there, and her friend Rennie Bergstrom was the other witness. So it was all very hush-hush. I no longer remember why. We thought it had to be that way.
You are an actress, I know, and therefore I would think that you might want to have a big wedding and put yourself on stage, but that was not what you did. Mm. Nor did you bring your bass.
In private life, I'm pretty quiet. If I'm performing, I'm performing, and if I'm not, I just like to go under the radar. So
I've heard that story before from musicians and actors and actresses, and I'm used to hearing it.
So we have a lot of us are really pretty shy personally.
How do you reckon? I mean, why is it? I can understand a person being shy. I can understand a person being gregarious. But what is it that would make it so common that shy people, in fact, become someone else or at least find another part of themselves when they have people listening on the radio and people watching them on stage?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm sure there are as many different answers as there are people who behave that way. For me, I don't know. I'm fairly quiet personally because I'm thinking all the time and creating stuff all the time. And if I have a job to do that's specific that pulls all that stuff to the front, then it's a very easy matter to be outgoing. That's what I'm supposed to be doing then. So it's not a shyness thing. It's not that I don't like who I am, so I have to invent other people to be outgoing as. So I don't know. And some people are just wonderful and out there and open all the time, like our late friend Catherine McNabb. She was just lovely in every setting. Not a shy thing about her.
Not indeed. And it was because of comments that I saw on Facebook when Catherine passed that reminded me of you. I had forgotten that.
Yes.
Well, we have songs to play, and if we talk too much, and I often allow that to happen, then we don't play the song. So do you have your playlist in front of you?
I do.
Good. Well, what I have next is Cowgirls Christmas.
Yes, and it's by one of Port Townsend's wonderful songwriters, Teresa Shadowin. And I'm happy to say that the song we were having technical difficulties with at the top, by David H. Schroeder, another fine local songwriter, there's another of his on the list a little later down, so we'll have to make sure to get that one.
And actually, we did hear the general store quite well, so that was not a problem.
Oh,
but
oh, okay, yeah. So it was just me.
Susan, it was all you. I hate to tell you that, but it's the truth.
Very good. Well, thanks to David Schroeder. I hope he's listening tonight. He's just a wonderful songwriter, wonderful guy.
And I hope he is too. And if he is, hello, David. And David was twice at least a guest on Tossed Salad. So we've had time together on the air, he and I as well. But Cowgirls Christmas.
The eggs are all gathered, the chickens are fed, and the horses dig into their hay. There's frost on the window and snow on the ground. I'm a cowgirl alone Christmas day. The kindling is chopped, there's a fire in the stove, and I'm wishing inside I could stay. But I know I'm not done, and there's still chores to do for a cowgirl alone Christmas day. The cattle are standing all huddled together, their breath rises still in the air. They're fed and they're watered, so I head for home. In the silence and cold, there's a prayer. Rest of the folks have gone into town. I don't know just how long they'll stay. But the ranch is all settled, and I'm happy to be a cowgirl alone Christmas day. The cattle are standing all huddled together. Breath rises still in the air. They're fed and they're watered, so I head for home. In the silence and cold, there's a prayer. The rest of the folks have gone into town. I don't know just how long they'll stay. Ranch is all settled, and I'm happy to be a cowgirl alone Christmas day.
And on Boxing Day, too. Oops.
Very lonely, this cowgirl business.
I'm sorry, I had not turned your speaker up, your microphone up, I mean.
Oh, yes, it's a very lonely business, cowgirling. I mean, most days of the year.
And you were not raised on the range.
I was raised in Port Townsend.
Yes, and your family were water people.
Yes, yes. Dad was an avid sailor. And he and his friend Jim Dobenberger got some family sailboats in the early 1960s. They were something new called Thunderbirds. They were the design was the winner of a contest for sailboats being made that would be affordable for a family of four to travel on. So Jim and Dad really got things rolling with sailing, and they taught junior sailing through Kiwanis forever. And yeah, that was really his love.
But aside from him, were you a sailor as well? Did you enjoy the water?
I was kind of a black sheep. I was a sailor by duress. My sister, Anne Abraham, just loved sailing, and she was very competitive, and she would win the series. In fact, she and her partner, Doug Bowling, have the family's old Thunderbird now, and they race it. So she really got that from Dad.
So as you were coming up in Port Townsend around the water and not so many horses, did you find yourself fancying maybe someday focusing on the inland areas and horses and cattle and cowboys and cowgirls?
It never would have occurred to me. What I wanted to do was sit in my room and read fantasy books like the Narnia Chronicles and play the cello and play the piano and do theater. Theater was really my big thing when I was a teenager and in my early 20s. That's really what I wanted to do with my life.
Well, I think it's likely that I saw you at Key City Public Theater once or twice.
Very likely. I was heavily involved in there. Well, I was first involved there when I was 16, when the church was, the old Catholic church up by the high school was the playhouse. But my ex-husband, Dave Carruthers, and I were heavily involved in Key City Players. For most of the 1990s, we were on the board, we directed, we acted. I think we each donated about 1,000 hours a year to keeping the place going. So that was a huge part for me.
How can you connect? I think you can connect. So just connect the development of the persona of Cimarron Sue with your interest in acting and your experience as an actress.
Well, one of the things that's really handy when you're acting is to have an active curiosity about the material you're presented with. And when Bruce first hired me to play in the trio with him, I mean, I have Western roots. My first ancestor who came out this way went to the Willamette Valley in Oregon in 1851. So, and she ended up moving up to Washington. So I'm something like a fifth generation Washingtonian. And until the 1920s, my family was on the other side of the state. My dad was born in a little town called Starbuck that's about 40 miles north of Walla Walla, and as has his dad and his grandfather. So, and I went to school at Whitman College over here, so I was familiar with this side of the state. But that's straying a bit from the point. I became engaged with Western culture through examining my own family's history and trying to make those connections, because that's really, in my opinion, what makes a performance, the ability to sing that kind of music, sincere, if you're connecting it to yourself in some way, rather than just, mouthing the words and hoping you get the chords right.
So, and that is what I was wondering, is when and how did you really embrace this role that you were playing of Cimarron Sue, a woman who presumably, we'll talk about horses in a moment because the next song is the quarter horse.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, you do have to have some horse talk. And in fact, we did have horses too when we were growing up. Well, that's kind of an exaggeration. Mine was a Welsh pony. She was a really cantankerous Welsh pony broodmare that would rub me off on trees and try to roll me off when she didn't want to go on a trail ride. So I did have a passing familiarity with horses. And then as I got to know Bruce better, he really did grow up on a cattle ranch in the Reno area where his family had been since 1900. And through stories about his family ranch and meeting some of his cousins who still worked in the business, I became more familiar with it in a more practical way. And of course we went to booking conferences and festivals and we met other people in the cowboy music and poetry trade. And I also became interested in writing cowboy poetry. So I had quite a few poems published too over the years at different websites and in anthologies.
Did the two of you perform at the Fisher Poets Gathering in Astoria?
No, we never did. Although we met some of the Fisher poets at the Cowboy Poetry Gathering down at Elko, and they were a huge hit. down there.
And there are not just Fisher Poets, the Fisher Poet Gathering, and you would have fit in very well. The next song, I cued it, or rather, I gave a hint about it a moment ago, The Quarter Horse.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
It is a song written by a Montana singer-songwriter named John Dunnigan. He lives and performs in the Whitefish area and used to be on the county fair circuit with us. Really lovely man, very engaging performer who can hold an audience spellbound through music and storytelling and just goofing around for, you know, hours at a time. And John's story, The Quarter Horse, I think several of us heard him play it at a convention showcase, and several of us ended up recording it and adding it to our song list. So this one did very well. Quarter Horse did very well with the cowboy radio stations. It made number one for quite a while at some cowboy radio station down in Georgia. So you just never know where the music's going to end up. But it's based on a true story that he experienced with his young son's disappointment at, well, the song will tell you all about it.
Come see me ride, Papa. This is my day. I caught a brand new horse and he wants to play. Come see me ride, Papa. It's here I want to stay. I want to ride so high that I'll fly away. He'd always be there when we'd come to town. Just a buckskin pony going round and round. My son was a baby when he took his first ride, with a handful of quarters and me by his side. Oh, the stories we'd make up at night before bed, about cowboys and heroes and sunsets so red. They all made impressions as time ran its course. None ran deeper than that boy's quarter horse. Come see me ride, Papa. This is my day. I got a brand new horse and he wants to play. Come see me ride, Papa. It's here I want to stay. I want to ride so high that I'll fly away. I knew it would happen, I just didn't know when. The pop machine appeared where the horse should have been. My son, he just stood there, then he looked all around. He walked on over, laid his quarters on the ground. Now he fell asleep on the ride back home, and I stopped quickly to use the telephone. When we made the corner, they're tied to our porch, was an honest-to-goodness real-life quarter horse. And now he says, come see me ride, Papa. First is my day. I got a brand new horse and he wants to play. Come see me ride, Papa. It's here I want to stay. I want to ride so high that I'll fly away. I want to ride so high that we'll fly away.
And my guest on Cats in Our Laps is Cimarron Sue. She sang as one half of a duo, Nevada Slim, in Cimarron Sioux. Nevada Slim was Bruce Matley, and I want to talk about Bruce now. His background, you mentioned he was from a ranching background. Can you tell us more about that?
His great-grandfather came to the Honey Lake region in California. It's right on the California-Nevada border in about 1863. And he had sort of a rooming house for people who were traveling by wagon, supply wagons or whatever. The family eventually moved into Reno and they purchased a ranch. And when Bruce was growing up, his dad was one of six siblings. And most of the siblings lived on the ranch on this one little lane in their own houses, and the grandparents still live there too. And the brothers all did cattle ranching together. They all worked the ranch. Well, the ranch, unfortunately, I mean, you can see it today, but it's right where the Reno Tahoe Airport is. The city of Reno condemned the ranch, and it was a many years legal battle before it was settled. The family moved off the ranch. They lost that wonderful integrated, multi-generational, amazing lifestyle that they had. And his cousins still talk about it to this day, how much they miss, you know, that ranch connection when they were all living along this one little lane when they were growing up. But Bruce eventually, when he started college, he discovered theater, and he eventually became not only an Actors Equity member and a professional actor for many years. He was the head of the theater department at Cornish for a while over in Seattle, but he also had his master's and his PhD in theater. And when he was 40, he decided he should go to law school and become a lawyer. So he also had a Juris Doctorate degree. I mean, he was an amazingly well-educated, intellectually gifted, very talented man. Yet he just felt that none of it was important somehow.
What was important to him then?
Yeah, I guess not. He would say, what's important to me is what's going on right now. I don't care about that other stuff. But all of those things, of course, fed very well into being a performing musician and someone who could handle a lot of the business aspects, too. And that's a bit of my background, too. I'm pretty deep in theater, but I finished my college degree in business administration and worked for many years as a CPA. So we had kind of the legal and the accounting and the acting and the music and all of that stuff going on for us.
So I figured it was fanciful on my part, having this picture of the two of you riding side by side across the wilds of Nevada.
Totally
indeed. It was more the case that you rode around the country, or maybe around the West at least, in a bus.
Yes, it's on you have the Whoopi Tai Trail.
I do.
CD there. That bus was an MCI 5, a 1965 MCI 5, and Bruce drove the bus. We later had a 1984 Prevost or something, but he always drove the bus as well as doing all the music. But boy, that thing could blow a lot of smoke. And you have to get along with somebody pretty well if you're going to share 300 square feet with them for up to 7 weeks, you know, when water has to be rationed and you have to be very conscientious about how full the black water tank is getting. And, you know, if a house system fails or the air conditioning isn't working, it can get pretty tense pretty fast. But when we were working at a festival or a fairgrounds, we'd go on to our bus and then we could kind of, you know, be ourselves. But we developed this ritual when we would leave the bus, even if we were just, you know, going to get a cup of coffee or something on the fairgrounds, if we weren't in costume or anything, we'd just say to each other, fair face. And we'd put on our fair smiles because we were like a amusement park characters practically. If we'd go on a fairground, you can't go out there and have someone recognize you and be all grumpy, you know, and yelling at kids. And not that we would do that, but.
Oh, one might. Did the bus ever break down on you?
Oh,
How many times did the bus break down?
Well, we were really lucky mechanically. We never got injured, but we'd take it into the mechanic sometimes between trips, and he'd say, oh, well, it's really good you brought it in now, because this plate was about to slip, and the next time you guys came down a steep hill, you would have died. We did have a blowout going along Highway 12. We were nearly home. We were headed from Yakima back to Prescott at that time, and had a blowout, which was really frightening, but luckily it was an outer tire. It wasn't one of the inners. And then the house systems, of course, were always going down on us, the plumbing and the water and the AC and sometimes the electrical. I mean, it, as Bruce used to say, it's all the problems you could imagine having if you own a truck and if you own a house. It just, they're all combined in this one thing. That's the bus motorhome combo.
So my guest here is Cimarron Sue. And is it okay if I just call you Sue?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think what I want to do, I have a couple things I need to do. One is I'd like to do the music now in twofers. In other words, not talk in between each one, because I have another guest coming at 9 o'clock, Susan Matley. And I think we're probably going to start with her a bit late. I don't think that'll be a problem. I think she stays up late, but I'm going to have to write to her. And so all the better that I have two songs to play consecutively. And my list says the first is Blue Shadows on the Trail, and then the Strawberry Roan. Those are all from Whoopie Tie.
Yeah, what? Can you change that up a little bit? We can shorten it up a little bit.
I'll do whatever you'd like.
Okay. If you would do Blue Shadows and then Ragtime Cowboy Joe, it's at the top of that next little list there.
I see it.
And then we can talk about both those things.
Okay. So we will have Blue Shadows on our trail and maybe Blue Shadows on your old bus.
Yeah.
Shades of night are falling and the wind begins to sigh and the world is silhouetted against the sky. Blue shadows on the trail, blue moon shining through the trees, and a plaintive wail from the distance sheds
as it's veiled. There'll be blue shadows on the trail. Shadows on the trail.
He always sings raggy music to the cattle as he swings back and forward in his saddle on a horse that is syncopated, gaited, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater, how they run when they hear the fella's gun, because the western folks all know he's a highfalutin son of a shootin' son of a gun from Arizona, ragtime cowboy Joe. Down in Arizona where the bad men are, and the only friend to guide you is the evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far is ragtime cowboy Joe. He always sings raggy music to the cattle as he swings back and forward in his saddle on a horse that is syncopated, gaited, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater, how they run when they hear the fella's gun, because the western folks all know he's a highfalutin son of a shootin' son of a gun from Arizona, ragtime cowboy Joe. Joe got his name from singing to the cows and sheep. Every night they say he sings a herd to sleep in a bass so rich and deep, crooning soft and low. Joe got his name from singing to the cows and sheep. Every night they say he sings a herd to sleep
in a bath so rich and deep, crooning soft and low.
He always sings raggy music to the cattle as he swings back and forward in his saddle on a horse that is syncopated, gaited, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater, how they run when they hear the fella's gun, because the western folks all know he's a highfalutin son of a shootin son of a gun from Arizona, ragtime cowboy. Talk about your cowboy, ragtime cowboy Joe.
Well, Sue, I was not able to get a hold of Susan Matley yet. I don't know whether she's willing to let us delay her visit to Cats in Our Lap. So I'm hoping that she may see the text message I've left for her and respond to it.
Oh, just shush.
You're not supposed to know anything about that. Let's talk.
Yeah, I don't know. What I know about her is she's a pretty flexible person.
All right. So we'll just maybe continue with the music. If it runs a little long, I have some other things to do. We might just take a break. You and I might take a break, and then we'll get to Susan Matley a little bit later. I know that she has, as actually Nevada Slim and you, Cimarron Sue, have, both of you, the three of you together, have quite a fan club. So we're going to probably inconvenience some people a little bit, but I think that they'll understand.
Okay. May I say just a couple things about the songs we just heard?
Well, that would be good. I shouldn't be the only one to talk, should I?
Okay. Well, I had specific things this time. It's so exciting.
Yes.
Blue Shadows on the Trail is an example of a song that was originally performed by the Sons of the Pioneers. And they were kind of movie cowboy singers, very popular with the Western music scene. And you can see that the song is about the landscape and nature and that kind of stuff. The beautiful pedal steel was played by a friend of ours. His name was Stan Remick, and he was a member of a cowboy gospel group called Mended Heart that was very big in the Seattle area and regionally. Now on Ragtime Cowboy Joe, the funny thing about this is the only cowboy song I knew when Bruce hired me to play in the trio. And that was because it was a favorite of my folks. My dad loved the song. I just had a text from my niece saying my mom, who is 96 and lives in Port Townsend, was singing along to Ragtime Cowboy Joe. But you'll notice some side players on that. It was Harry Dudley from Port Townsend on the drums, Teresa Shadowin on the piano, or as we call it in this application, the pianer, and then Rex Rice on the trombone, the late, great Rex Rice, who came into the session and he said, "You want me to play this in D?" And I said, "Yeah." And apparently that's not a good key for trombones, but he was a good sport and he got it out there. So that was a very fun project to work on.
Okay, then I'll ask you a question here. And that is, knowing now that both of you were theater people, and both of you had been good students in your lives, no doubt you did a good bit of research in putting your act together, the Nevada Slim and Cimarron Sue. And I'd like to know who you studied and how you studied.
Well, for me, it was, gosh, I don't know, a wide variety of sources. We used to do, one of our most popular offerings were what we called our bio shows. So we would do music, for example, of the Sons of the Pioneers, and then in a 45-minute to hour and a half show, depending on the format people wanted, we would tell the story of the group in between the songs. And that was scripted. In fact, the Sons of the Pioneers show, we previewed that down at the Upstage, and Harry Dudley was in the cast with us. He was just great. Not only did he do drums, but he played washboard, and when we did cigarettes and whiskey, blacked out a tooth, and he was just totally there for us. We read lots of books. There was a lot of information about the original cowboy poetry and music collected by people like Jack Thorpe, who used to go around to all the different cow camps in the 19th century and find fragments of different songs and stories that were created over the years and were kind of part of this wider cowboy culture. Of course, there's always our own experiences. And a little further down the list, there are a couple of songs that speak to our experiences as people who live in the West and where our interest in Western research led us. So just a multitude of sources, really. We'd find something that interested us and run with it.
And you really were an act. I mean, oops, what have I done to myself here? Uh-oh, Susan, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, good. Well, I have messed up. I bet if I did this, I get my screen back. Ha-ha.
Oh, okay.
Lucky me. Well, I hit something, some combination of keys, and everybody disappeared. So you have not told me the next piece you want me to play, and I'm hoping that it, in fact, I'm going to insist that it can be either on Whoopie Tie or Herds, Horses, and Song, because I have those two in the two players I have.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do Little Joe the Wrangler, because that one was written by Jack Thorpe, who was one of these fellows that went around collecting cowboy songs and poetry. The other best known one was named Lomax, and he did his gathering in the early 20th century.
Okay, and I'm ready with that. Sue, what I'm going to do after this plays is I'm going to play a poem by somebody whom you may know or may not, Deborah Kate Hammond.
Oh, yes.
She knows you, certainly, and she's most likely listening at the moment. She is the poet laureate of this show, so not a poem that she wrote, but a poem that someone else did. She reads on the show every week. And then I have other things to do, and I'll probably get back to you, oh, we'll say, just a couple of clicks after 9 o'clock.
And okay, very good.
Play a couple more songs, and then I'm going to have to say goodbye to you and get on with Susan Matley.
Well, I think she's very generous to give me a little bit of her time. I think she's just great that way.
And you know her then? Oh, I didn't realize
that. I do.
Uh-huh.
I do. Yeah, we have a lot in common, as it turns out.
Little Joe the Wrangler will wrangle nevermore. His days with the roundup, they are o'er. was a year ago last April. He joined the outfit here, just a little Texas stray and all alone. Was long late in the evening, he rode up to the herd on a little old brown pony he called Chaw. In his broken shoes and overalls, a harder looking kid you never in your life before had saw. His saddle was a Texas cack built many years ago, an okay spur from 1 foot idly swung. With his hot roll in a cotton sack he'd loosely tied behind, and a canteen from his saddle horn he'd smung. He said he'd had to leave his home, his pa had married twice, his new ma beat him every day or two. So he saddled up old Chaw one night and lit a shuck this way. Thought he'd try to paddle his own canoe. He said if we would give him work, he'd do the best he could, though he didn't know straight up about a cow. So the boss, he cut him out a mount and kind of put him on, 'cause he sort of liked this little stray somehow. Taught him how to herd the horses, and he learned to know them all, and to round them up by daybreak if he could, and to trail the old chuck wagon, and always hitch the team, and to help the cookie evenings gather wool. We'd driven to Red River, and the weather, it was fine. We camped down on the south side in a bend. When a norther commenced blowing, and we called an extra guard, 'cause it took all hands to hold the cattle then. Now little Joe, the wrangler, was called out with the rest, and barely had the young kid reached the herd, when the cattle they stampeded, like a hailstorm long they flew, and all of us a-riding for the lead. Through the streaks of lightning we could see a horse far up ahead. It was little Joe, the wrangler in the lead. He was riding old Blue Rocket with the slicker o'er his head, trying to catch the leaders in their speed. At last we got a milling and kind of quieted down, and the extra guard back to the camp did go. But one of them was missing, and we all knew at a glance it was our little Texas stray, poor Wrangler Joe. Next morning, just at sunup, we found where Rocket fell, down a washout 20 feet below. Beneath his horse, his life was gone. The horse had rung the knell for our little Texas stray, poor Wrangler Joe.
And you're hearing that voice a lot this evening on Cats and Our Lamps. That is the voice of Cimarron Sue. She performed with Nevada Slim. They were Nevada Slim and Cimarron Sue. Haven't performed for quite a while. They were around Port Townsend. Had Port Townsend connections largely through Cimarron. But nowadays, not so. Anyhow, we're going to play more of their music and talk more with Cimarron Sue in a few minutes. But we have Deborah Kate Hammond with another poem, our poet laureate, and then some other things to do as well. So let's go to Deborah Kate. We'll ask her to introduce the poem she's going to read, and then I'll tell you what's next after we're ready for it.
Here's a poem by Linda Pastan. It's called, Why Are Your Poems So Dark? Isn't the moon dark, too, most of the time? And doesn't the white page seem unfinished without the dark stain of alphabets? When God demanded light, he didn't banish darkness. Instead, he invented ebony and crows and that small mole on your left cheekbone. Or did you mean to ask, why are you sad so often? Ask the moon. Ask what it has witnessed.
Oh, the moon, we cannot see the moon tonight, and I suppose the moon cannot see us. And I haven't looked out the window in a while. I'm going to get a chance to stand up and stretch here and look out the window, and I'm going to see if it's still snowing. And if it is, you may know, you may not. I'll tell you otherwise whether it is or whether it isn't. This is a show called Cats in Our Laps, and I'm on KPTZ, and we are in Port Townsend. And on your radio, if you're listening on the radio, you've tuned into 91.9. And if you're listening on some other kind of device, like a computer or a telephone, you're listening at kptz.org. And if you're listening on Sunday, well, you can hear this show again, two-thirds of it again, on Friday of this coming week. You will hear the first 2 hours, actually. Thanks to Alex Henley, who edits this show down to two tidy hours for rebroadcasting on the alternate Fridays, it's the whole 3 hours, but this coming Friday it's going to be just the first two. And Alex is the saint who takes all of what we put together here and makes it something that people can listen to in 2 hours. And with that, I'm going to put some music on, and I'm going to get ready for Susan Matley, and I'm going to get ready for more Cimarron Sue and Nevada Slim. But let's listen to one more time with What in the World Are You Going to Be Doing on New Year's Eve? Now we say goodbye to those people who, on Friday, we said goodbye to them already, haven't I? People who are listening now, if they want to listen to the rest of Cimarron Sue and Nevada Slim and to Susan Matley and to whatever else I put together, I'll have to listen via the program archive function, via kptz.org. That is a website, of course. There's much more that you can do with the KBTZ website. You can learn, you can read the local news that otherwise you can hear on the air. If you miss it on the air, you can read it. You can learn about the radio station in many other ways. You can learn about the community. You will notice that this week, which is to say the day after tomorrow or a few days ago, if this is, no, this isn't Friday for you anymore, is it? If you haven't, you will not be able to listen to, sorry, we'll try this again. You will not be able to listen to Dr. Allison Berry tomorrow Monday because she will not be on the air tomorrow Monday. But a week from Monday, she will. And commonly, as a matter of practice, we present Dr. Berry, who is the public health officer for Jefferson and Clallam counties. The subject clearly is COVID-19, and she will answer your questions if you submit them to the radio station. She answers many questions, and she handles them quite well. That is every Monday except tomorrow, the 27th of December, because she is taking that Monday off. Let's look at more about the radio station KPTZ. Attention, Please. Let's talk about that for a moment. This week on Attention, Please, host Steve Evans sits by the gas stove in their boathouse and talks with Nordland General Store owners Tom and Sue Rose about building back and better perhaps, from the fire that destroyed the iconic business a little more than a year ago, and most importantly, about plans or the lack thereof for the traditional polar plunge that happens each New Year's Day off of their Mystery Bay dock opposite the store. Attention Please airs Mondays at noon and also at 5 on Mondays, and repeats Saturdays at noon also, exclusively here on KPTZ in Port Townsend. This show, as I have told you a time or two, is Cats in Our Laps. You can write to me at this moment by writing to dj@kptz.org if you want to. You want to speak a whoopee-tie-i-o to Cimarron Sue, that would be welcome, or anything else you might have to say. And you also could write to me anytime you'd like. Write to me as the host of Cats and Our Laps at Cats, that is spelled C-A-T-S, of course, at kptz.org. Now, we're going to have Susan Matley, an author of some pretty fantastic fantasy books. I would say, I'm looking at my clock, probably at around 10 minutes after the hour of 9, and unless you're in some other time zone, and then it's 10 minutes after whatever hour that you happen to be living in at this moment. But I think now I'm going to make sure that Cimarron Sue is not muted. I had her muted. I'm trying to get her to unmute herself. Maybe she will. Maybe she won't. She can hear me. I'll ask her again. Ask to unmute, it says on my screen.
Unmute.
Hey,
unmute.
You,
hi.
Yeah, well, I figured you'd get it eventually. So we have more music to play, a couple of songs. I have something I was going to ask you before we did that, though. Oh, yes. Nevada Slim is gone, and we know that. We've talked about that, and I'm sad about that. But what about Cimarron Sue? Will we ever hear her again? And does she ever think about getting her guitar and her bass and being a solo?
Probably not. I might torment someone with my accordion sometime. That's kind of fun. One of the wonderful things about doing this music is I picked up a lot of little bits and pieces of other instruments like baritone, ukulele, and accordion. But right now, musically, I'm having fun with piano. I got myself a spinet piano a couple of years ago and started playing that again. But the one group I would, my dream to perform again in a music setting would be with a group I was with right at about the same time I got together with Nevada Slim. I performed with a group called the Schwartz Sisters, and we had a cowgirl sister act, and it was comedy and music from everything from doo-wop back to cowboy songs to Marlena Dietrich singing The Little Drummer Boy. I mean, we kind of did it all. And it was a wacky, really fun show. And both of those ladies are still around. I won't reveal their identities, but I hope you're out there listening. And I hope we get together and sing someplace besides in a bar sometime. Although that's fun too.
And they're not in Walla Walla, I don't imagine.
No, they're in Port Townsend. That's kind of why we don't do it anymore. Bruce and I moved over here in 2007. But we did lots of festivals, and we performed at the Upstage quite a bit. We did Wooden Boat Festival, private parties, whatever. And often it incorporated things like tap dancing or comedy sketches or guest artists who did interesting things like tango. But yeah, it was just a very wackily scripted kind of fun thing. And we were heavily costumed. We looked nothing alike in person, but we had matching wigs and matching lipstick and matching dark glasses.
And as it happens, I saw you perform, so I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you're so far away, and you have not, you're not going to return to Port Townsend? Maybe to visit, but you like it in Walla Walla. And if so, why?
I like it in Walla Walla. It's a really wonderful town for history, which is one of my great loves. And my performing life now is through the Living History Program at Fort Walla Walla. I tell the stories of two different people of historic significance here as them. So it involves research and writing and acting and local history. And I just love it. It really comes alive for me. So
move from one small town to another. You couldn't get farther away and still be in Washington.
Well, no. Don't tell my mom.
I'm
mom,
sure
don't listen. Now, Mom comes over to see me sometimes too, but it's a great town for music and theater and history. There are over 100 wineries in the county, and some of them are excellent. So there's all kinds of stuff that I really enjoy doing here. And, you know, if you grew up in Port Townsend and everybody knew who you were the whole time you were growing up, and you were always somebody's niece or daughter or cousin or employee or something, it's kind of nice to be over here and just be a little more anonymous, you know, have a little more autonomy.
And just be Cimarron Sioux, you mean?
Yeah, just be Cimarron Sioux, whatever that means.
We won't ask too many questions about that. So we have a couple more songs to play, and I think we'll do them back to back, because really, Susan Matley, I can tell just the vibes that are coming towards me. I'm getting myself in trouble here. So you have chosen a couple more songs for us to close, but the chat function, now we have gone beyond it, so I don't know. Well, I guess I do know, actually. What I have ready to play, to start anyway, is The Ranch That I Cannot See.
Yes.
So, words about that?
Yes, it was written by Bruce, and it pretty much tells the story of his family ranch being condemned and turned into the Reno Airport, and the emotions about that.
And we'll play that, and then tell me the last piece we're going to play. You have told me, but I cannot see it on the screen anymore.
Oh, yes. It's Show Me Mister. It's the story of the first rodeo cowgirl who broke the barrier and entered a bucking bronc contest against the men in the early 20th century. So it's not really straight history, but it's pretty much like it. And it was, I wrote this song, and it was a finalist for Western Writers of America Best Western Song of the Year in 2011. So.
Okay, so we will play these two, and then we'll both stand up, turn around clockwise twice, sit back down again, and begin as we begin.
Okay, sounds good.
Overland in 1863, fleeing civil war and strife. Great grandma and great grandpa came, hoping for a peaceful life. Settled first near Susanville to Long Valley, they moved on. Finally in the Truckee Meadows, the family's roots at last were done. In their time, Grandma and Grandpa built the ranch and saw through change. 1,000 acres deeded home place, 10,000 lease land range. Lean and fat years working side by side, draft horses, cattle, hay. Grandma birthed 10 youngsters and 6 survived to take their place. Winter's dead and all my uncles plied those frozen fields to feed. With a team of gentle percherons, I'd pretend to drive, you see. And the stove-up old-time ranch hands, they taught useful things to me. Gave me my first tobacco chaw, how they laughed when I turned green. Learning ranch craft and cowboy songs there at Daddy's, gentle me. Now it's a burning loss to me, ranch that I can't see. 'Cause Reno town crept ever closer, and the elected thieves decreed they'd take it all, eminent domain, to bring gambling fools and greed. So they did. built a mighty airport, warehouses, streets, and steel. We had to move right off of there. For years we fought that shifty deal. Yeah, I built right on our heritage, where I'd learned to work and play. Scattered off to ranch in elsewhere, the family never was the same. Now we put on this asphalt, such progress makes no sense to me. I know it's still there somewhere, the ranch that I can't see. Yes, I know it's down there in the land, the ranch that I can't see.
Frontier days in 1901, a legend was born in rodeo, that a feisty cowgirl by the name of Prairie Rose picked up a gauntlet that a cowboy throw.
He said, "Miss Prairie Rose, you ride good for a gal. Of the bronco busting ladies, you're the best. But here we got a rule that a cowgirl can't ride in Cheyenne, Wyoming's bucking bronc contest."
Miss Prairie Rose was no one's fool. She stood up to the test. She went to the officials and she made a sharp protest.
Some fellers said our bylaws state no cowgirls is allowed.
So Prairie Rose, she bellered in a husky voice and loud, "Can you show me, mister, where it says I can't ride? 'Cause I can sit a bronc as well as any man. Forget about the hobbles, I can ride in slick. Just saddle up and pull the blind and let that horse rip. I got years of breaking outlaws under my belt. At my daddy's ranch I was top buckaroo. So show me where it's written down I can't ride, 'cause I'm gonna win that buckle off of you."
Those rodeo committee men were taken quite aback by this bold red-haired missy and her fervent attack. They hemmed and hawed, they chawed and spat, they stared down at their boots. She'd called their bluff. They didn't have bylaws to produce.
The legend has it that they gave her a mount, though the end result was never brought to light. And records show in 16 years Miss Prairie Rose did win the championship buckle for the women's bronc outright. And the legend suits her right down to a T. That fiery spirit burned in Rose her whole life. Show me where it's written down I can't ride, 'cause I'm gonna win that buckle off of you. You think I'm crazy, I'm gonna win that buckle off of you. I'm getting angry, I'm gonna win that buckle off of you.
And those are the final two songs for the night by Cimarron Sue and Nevada Slim. Just a couple more questions and a goodbye. Cimarron Sue is on the line with me. You did write that last song, and that's a nice piece of writing for sure. When did you write it?
Oh, gosh. We recorded that CD in 2010, so I probably wrote it in 2009. Rodeo Cowgirls was something that I could really relate to because they weren't necessarily ranch cowgirls. Sometimes they were, but they could just be women who had been hairdressers and decided they were going to become trick riders. So it was more of an entertainment really than a real ranching thing. And it was a place where women could break some glass ceilings too, which is always of interest.
I wonder if there are more and more of them in the decade or so since you wrote the song.
More and more stunt cowgirls?
I
don't know. I know of some people who are music performers, cowboy music performers, who take that up as a sideline. I mean, usually they're, you know, the younger folks who are like in their 20s and they know that they're never really going to die or get seriously injured.
So we're talking show business here. The song by Bruce, The Rants He Cannot See, actually is quite a moving song. And
yes.
I'd not knowing the backstory behind the song, I had listened to it, but I had not known how much it would have meant to him. And anyway, moving song for me.
Yes.
Cimarron Sue, I'm going to have to say goodbye to you. This has been a wonderful time together. But I will invite you, if you want to stick around, you know, you're on Zoom, we're on Zoom together, and Susan Matley, the author, well-known author, is going to come on with me shortly. If you want to stick around and then you'll be able to see her on the screen, you're welcome to do that.
Oh, I'm always happy to see Susan Matley.
Yeah, so you know her. Wonderful. Well, you stick around, and I'm going to read a couple of announcements, and then we will get Ms. Matley up on our Zoom screen.